Welcome to the Humble and Honest Podcast. Today's episode is with Jeff and Tara Mattson. Jeff and Tara have each invested more than two decades in leadership coaching and trauma-informed therapy, and have developed national organizations and churches navigate difficult leadership crises. The Mattsons bring their unique experience and wisdom to their first book together, Shrinking the Integrity Gap Between What Leaders Preach and Live. Jeff and Tara are married co-founders of Living Wholehearted and the Courageous Girls Movement. They coach leaders in a variety of settings, from corporate offices to leadership retreats and individual counseling. Their professional experience and research have formed their unique perspective on the relationship between leadership and integrity. Jeff, an executive lead coach, and Tara, a licensed therapist and author of Courageous, Being Daughters Rooted in Grace, are also both raising two daughters in the state of Oregon. Today, we talk about toxic leadership. How does that happen? How do you tell the difference between a leader that could be toxic and one that's just passionate about what they do? And we even touch on social media practices. I truly appreciate having them on this podcast for this conversation, and I believe you listening will learn so much about yourself and the people around you. So let's get into it. My conversation with Jeff and Tara Mattson. Jeff and Tara Mattson, I am truly blessed to have you on the Humble and Honest Podcast today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you, Stephen.
Listen, you guys have such an important ministry, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like your ministry is more important than ever right now. Like, I can't help but think, like, you guys are getting phone calls by the hour in light of all of the things that have been happening in our world and in our culture. And one of the things that you guys are famous for specifically is your book, The Integrity Gap. And I want to go into all of that, but first let's start off here. Who is Jeff and Tara Mattson, and how did they get to the platform they're on today?
Well, we're a husband and wife combo here, a team, and grateful to for being a teammate, my teammate here, celebrating 20 years together. So that's something that we could be excited about.
That's a miracle in these days. So
yeah, no, and off to a good start, really. We say that because my grandparents, they almost made it to 73 years of marriage. So I say off to a good start. 20 is like, you know, still a drop in the bucket. But we also are in real life, we're raising two daughters ourselves, 12 and 14 right now. And we're also business partners, and we've been at doing this work, professional counseling, organizational consulting and development, kind of this combination of these two disciplines, really formally since 2011. And before then, Tara's been in private practice. Now, this is the 15th year.
I'm on 16th year. Yeah. And how we get to this platform, I love that question. To be honest, it's just been being faithful in the things that God has put before us and Him just continuing to expand our territory. So we haven't been seeking after much except just being faithful to what's right in front of us and then saying yes when the next thing comes.
I think we're trying to be faithful, and that's a challenge every day, is it not?
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. So one of the things, phrases I believe would be associated with you guys is that you guys are experts in helping those that are in the integrity gap. That's the name of your book, and that's something that you guys seem to speak on often in your conversations. I need to know first, though, because sometimes terminology can get lost on different people. What is an integrity gap, and how does someone know if they have one? What are the signs?
That's a great question. An integrity gap is anything where we are teaching something or preaching something, and there is a gap between how we're actually living it in real time. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, every single one of us has a gap if you are human. It's a noble pursuit to try to shrink that gap. And really the only one that doesn't have the gap is Jesus Himself. Yeah. but there's this sense of a healthier leader being aware of their gap and intentionally taking time to shrink that gap over the years, because our gaps impact everybody in our wake, whether we know it or not, in a positive or negative way. So really, it's the gap between what we say and what we do.
I absolutely love that answer. And I can, I'll be the first to say, I definitely have had to look at my own integrity gaps and realize exactly that. But the integrity gap, like you've already mentioned, is something that all of us have. Only Jesus is the only one that never had that. The work of identifying where that is and where it came from is difficult. It's uncomfortable, but I truly do believe there's also a reward when you get on the other side of that. Now, here's the thing about that also. Many times when we see the integrity gaps, we see that perhaps there was something in our past that would be considered traumatic, that would cause us to act out in different ways because we never addressed it. Something else that I also hear in culture often is that, you know, we got first world problems. I'm a millennial. We've had things so easy compared to the generations before it. And sometimes there seems to be an idea that there are levels of trauma, that what you consider trauma wasn't actually trauma at all. Get over it and move on. Is there such a thing as misdiagnosing trauma for maybe something that's kind of not that big of a deal in light of everything in the world?
It's a really important question, and there'll be a lot of varieties of answers out there, but I'll answer from our perspective is we're not interested in clarifying whether it's a big T or a little T. A lot of times trauma is about your cultural perspective, your wiring. I mean, what happens to me and what happens to Jeff is going to impact us differently based on our story, the fact that he's a man, I'm a woman, our environment, our background. And so to call something traumatic as kind of just an overarching is really about our perception and how it impacted me. And so I always use this analogy of, you know, it doesn't really matter whether it's a golf ball or a bowling ball that goes through the glass window. In either case, the window was broken. And so what really is most impactful is how do we respond to that window? And when it's dismissed, it's only going to stay broken. When it's comforted and cared for and validated, and there's some comfort and care that comes around that, then it can heal. We can actually restore it. So it doesn't matter so much what the trauma is. It matters how we respond to the trauma. So those dismissive statements of, well, it's just because, or these are first world problems. I know what we're trying to do. We're trying to help people see perspective of it's worse out there. But when we say that, it dismisses, and I would say we focus mostly on high capacity leaders. Leaders are really good at dismissing our own stories, right? We're really good because we're able to do more, but we're able to perform more. That's all. But the pain and being human and the struggle, I personally got a lot of dismissing going on in my own head that left me with some large integrity gaps. And what I mean is I dismissed my own trauma, my own story, because it wasn't so bad, which left me with wide open reactions. I was coping in unhealthy ways, which is isolation. I'm not being vulnerable with you. I'm taking care of my own needs because those are the things I learned. You know, all of those were unhealthy integrity gaps that maybe it's not sex addiction, but it still creates a wake of problems. And I needed to be able to go in and understand my own pain and my own story, regardless of the comparison game. So my bias is let's not compare. Let's really go in and take care and comfort and understand why that was traumatic for us. And really, the definition of trauma is anything out of the ordinary or anything less than nurturing. So there's a lot of things that could be called traumatic based on what felt less than nurturing for us.
And it's really common for people in general to not want to be like, I mean, mine wasn't as bad, you know, and in many leaders' stories, those that went kind of to that performance side, and there's sort of two responses that generally trauma victims have, if you will. And I say trauma victims, people that experienced anything out of the ordinary. That's a very broad focus, but that's actually a more real. The neuroscience indicates that what happens in our brains impacts us, and it really, as Tara describes, no matter if it was a divorce, if it was kind of a constant emotional abuse, beratement when you were a child from a parent or from another leader or a teacher or something like that. And it happened maybe 10 times or one time. I mean, some things can happen and stick. And when we don't minimize, but we look to and try to examine what is our response from that, it's really key. And it might be sex addiction. It might be first responder. I witnessed murder, or I came across a situation in a wartime scenario. But it also could be those other things that we described, right? It could be the bullying situation when I was in elementary or middle school, or it could be, again, I felt like I was alone a lot at home and I wasn't seen, you know, by my parents or my parents favored one of my siblings over me. So these kinds of things have an effect on us in our brains and our bodies. And it's important. You can go that victim route or you can go the performer route. And those are a couple of the common responses. And sometimes you can have both going on in your life.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely agree with that. Powerful answer. Thank you. The area of integrity gap that often seems to have the most damage is leadership. There's self-damage always, for sure, whether we realize it or not. But many of the leaders that we've seen, especially in the church recently, that have had integrity gaps, you definitely see the wake of just how many people have been negatively affected by that. And often in leadership, this is the issue that I've seen so often in the church world, because I'm a pastor and I've interacted with pastors in my entire life growing up in church. And often there's the idea of, oh, they're a passionate leader. That's why they say what they say. That's why they do what they do. And then later on, sometimes that pastor ends up getting called out as being toxic. What is the difference between someone that would be a toxic leader and someone that's just kind of passionate and has a way of doing things and the way they do it is effective? Do they look the same? Are they different? Help me understand.
What comes to my mind, our minds together, because we've talked about this, is that really it's about the motive of a leader, right? In Proverbs, we're talking about all a man's or all a person's ways seem innocent to them. Motives are weighed by the Lord. And I'm so thankful that that's in the scriptures, because motive is so important. And it depends on the motive of the leader. Is the motive of the leader to internally get something from someone else in an unhealthy way? Or to give in from a healthy sense, right? Because their needs are being met as followers of Christ by God. And no one does this perfectly, right? Only Christ, as we have already acknowledged, didn't have the integrity gap. But we can, with increasing discipline and intentionality, and with the help of the Holy Spirit, we can receive love and our needs met from God, and in healthy interdependent living with one another, not codependent, not one-sided living, but in a healthy interdependence, the body of Christ is designed to function. That's a challenge. And that's something that we can do. And when leaders get a hold of that, when they start thinking that way, as I want to be as healthy as I can, so that I can be a safe leader to others and that I can actually help others and lift others up. That's the difference between toxic leadership and that we call wholehearted leadership. And that's never arriving, but it's becoming, right? It's a way of being.
So you see motive, like, is somebody, do they have close people to them? Do people really know them outside of their leadership role? Or are they always that passionate leader who's got to lead everywhere they're going? So that is kind of a cue on, like, motive. Will I let somebody into my personhood outside of just my leadership? and numbers. I do think that we have to be careful because we have the pendulum swing of ignoring and dismissing red flags. We've seen that over and over with leaders. Like people were saying, I'm concerned. And we say, no, that's your problem because this leader is anointed. And yet there's in numbers, I think God is trying to say something. Trauma survivors often won't speak up too. And that's part of the result of trauma. It says your voice doesn't matter. And so a leader that says your voice doesn't matter is participating in that trauma piece. So I think that's another re-victimization. So I think those are just small cues. There's a lot there, but they're often with a very charismatic leader. I think we've got to really listen, not just to the behaviors or watching, but also again, a collective sense of does everybody feel at peace with this person? Even if I'm not a fan of their wiring or their style, human style is very different from sin issues. And so that's where it can get confusing and it's case by case.
I really like that. Well, you bring up a great point. You know, style can sometimes just not be preferred and you may not like them because of that, but that doesn't necessarily equal they are in some way toxic or flawed in any sense. I do want to ask this. So, you know, there's a lot going on. At the time of this recording, the Hillsong Dallas campus has even closed because they said there's too much. We're running an investigation and we need stuff to be healthier. I'm not in the business of outing pastors or preachers or anything, but I do want to know from what you've seen with recent scandals, with things that have happened, not just recently, but maybe in times past, from your expertise, no names, are you able to tell when something is wrong with the leader before the scandal happens? Mm.
And I think that's actually what we're trying to encourage people through becoming, I would say, more trauma-informed, to see the signs first and foremost in themselves as we examine ourselves. You know, and the scripture is clear, right? You know, before we do any try to point looking at someone else, the log and or the splinter in someone else's eye, right? So I think we want to have that mindset. We want to be then, especially in leadership, looking and stewarding the flock, if you will, that God's given us, and or whatever that might be. It might be your family again. It might be your organization, and so on and so forth. But there are signs, and we wrote about these signs in ourselves and what we would see in other leaders.
Maybe you should name a couple.
Yeah, symptoms. We've been talking about it informally, but yeah, symptoms that you can tell. And on a preventative end, in yourself, check early and check in community in a safe, trusting relationship so that you can address these things earlier on in the journey, right? And so some of them relate to, I would say, our own, every leader has some sort of point on the spectrum of what we would say is narcissism. There's a huge difference between, again, just our sort of our selfish nature that we'd be thinking about, well, what about me in this? Our tendencies to, like I said, judge ourselves by our intentions and others by motives, that would be on the subtle end of maybe the narcissistic spectrum. So I just think owning that as humans is important and as leaders. But there's a huge difference there between that and then clinical type 2 narcissistic personality disorder that you'd find in diagnostic manuals and such. But narcissism is something that we would be wanting to think about. Every leader is going to run into these vulnerabilities. Isolation and the tendency to isolate and to start believing our own press, that no one knows what I'm going through and what I hold, and the reality of the trauma that is unique to any form of leadership. I think that is a normative experience for any leader, is that there's unique trauma that others, that followers per se, don't have. And I think owning that and understanding that. So isolation is definitely something that a leader is vulnerable to. What are some others?
Yeah, so I think those red flags are, we're seeing a leader, again, awesome on stage, but nobody really knows them. So what's hard is from afar, we might, because we've been around a lot of unhealthy leaders or great charismatic leaders that are got some major gaps, our sniffer is stronger. Yeah. But what we're trying to do is help the church at large to get better at understanding that we can't throw out our humanity and our trauma stories just because we know Jesus and love Jesus and we all have really great gifts. I could smooze all kinds of people with my gifting and my education. But the truth is who really knows that whether I'm living with integrity? This guy right here.
Kids.
My friends, my kids. And that's who you want to be looking at with those leaders, is to say, what are their local, the people that are connected to them the most, are they trusting them? Do they even have people that trust them? Mm-hmm. And those are those early red flags that we start to see that people will ignore in the church because they're super gifted and they're bringing people. People are just giving money to the church in droves, you know, all kinds of things. Or because we justify because the fruit looks like it's there. But eventually we see that it's just been marble on dry rot, and eventually it will leak. And so even in the hiring process, being able to work with leaders that actually know their story. I'm going to say this one thing. It seems really simple, but I want us to think about it. We know somebody's healthy when they can have a sober sense of who they are and their story. They're not over glamorizing their trauma and their story, but they can say it was sad. Here's the reality. Here's my weaknesses. Here's my strengths. Or they're not overly shaming of themselves, but they can sense that their identity is as loved and I'm a child of God, but here's the stuff I'm still working on. That's what I want to hear from a leader that's been leading for 40 years or is 2 years into the journey. That's kind of a sober sense of where they're at. And I think we're just missing that part in the process before we put people on the stage or we give them the mic.
And I would also say that just to add another element of this is that if you're around a leader or you're seeing a leader that that likes to keep everybody at bay and it's them being the one that is providing the teaching and instruction all the time. And they are really great at going with you and empathizing with you, but there's just no humanity in them in that process. And they're maintaining control in those situations. That's a safe place to hide for a leader that to do all this kingdom work, and I'm loving others, and we're just we're doing all of these things, but that's a subtle way that they can hide from actually having to be real and honest about what's going on. And that's a form of compartmentalization, control mechanism. And so that's part of the sniffers that we're talking about when we talk about being around this enough and seeing it more. And it's not just, again, about judging everybody else. It's about being aware of what's going on in us and our tendency to maybe be pulled in any of these directions as well.
Hey, world. I hope you're enjoying this conversation so far. It would mean so much to me if you took some time to help support this show. You could do that in several different ways. First, you can share, subscribe, and leave a review for the podcast so more people get the chance to know about it. Also, you can be a contributor through Patreon. For as low as $1 a month, you can help support this show and help continue these conversations you are hearing. In fact, as a thank you, patrons will be getting all episodes of the Humble and Honest podcast this season in their entirety. I don't know if you knew this, but this conversation with Jeff and Tara was over an hour long, and we get deeper than what you even hear on this version of the episode. So if you want to hear that along with other great bonus content, like my response to these episodes and some unreleased episodes, all that is available for you at Patreon. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can check it out. But right now, let's get back into this conversation with Jeff and Tara Mattson. What do you do? And I think you're answering it already. When literally, if... You know, this is hypothetical. This is not me, but this is hypothetical. If I tell somebody that I struggle with pornography as a pastor, there's a strong chance I lose my job. But then I also keep it to myself, and then things escalate, and now there's a whole scandal that's even worse. And it's kind of like, how does one find the freedom to say, hey, I need help, but please don't take away my livelihood over the matter? Now, if you cross a line, I think there's just And that's everywhere in life. There's certain lines that if you cross, you just disqualify yourself for the position. But I think there's a lot of people that could have been saved from going so far if they would have been honest earlier. So if I'm hearing what you're saying, one of the ways that helps is having people that are in your sphere that aren't necessarily also under your leadership. Mm-hmm. Is that what I'm hearing correctly?
Or the decision makers for your job.
The decision makers.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's where a counselor or executive coaching, that's where we've come alongside, is we're not tied into the system, mm-hmm. but we can be a confidential place to really help you discerning. And the healthier a leader's getting, the more that they'll be the one to say, I need to walk away from my job right now because it's really running interference with my getting whole versus it being just a consequence. And we talk about the difference between a Saul heart and a David heart. And a David heart is like when they're confronted, whether by the Holy Spirit or when someone in your safe community who's saying, hey, this pornography issue, we've been praying about this for a while and it's still not going away. You need some help. The David heart will respond and say, yeah, I did it. And I'm willing to live with some of the consequences. The Saul is going to manage those consequences. And it's going to say, how do I do this in a way that I can keep everything in place and still get help? And you can't do both. So you got to be willing to trust God with the consequences if you're wanting to get help and get whole. And all of us are in that boat. And so the more, so that's one half. The other half, Jeff's probably going to speak to.
Well, I just want to say that to validate the fact that it's scary, to the idea of bringing this to the into light, anything that would be hidden like that, right? Because of the consequences in the church, you know, she is, the bride, you know, of Christ, and she is still, growing and, she is still becoming. And we also know of so many stories where, confession was made and, the church, she handled it terribly.
Yeah.
And lives were ruined. So I don't want to minimize that, the fear that is, there for many, who are struggling with, issues that could very likely get them fired or they lose their community altogether. And yet I will say this, we would say this, that that is the confession, drawing things into the light. There are no shortcuts there. And God has provided those outlets for us because he loves us. Mm-hmm. He wants us to be free, to help us in our journeys, to not bear those burdens like that, mm-hmm. no matter what they are. And in the church, we still have a problem with labeling certain burdens, certain sin issues greater than the other. When Jesus says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and he still loves us despite our choices to go back to I call it, this is my metaphor, the toilet water. When I go back and drink the toilet water in my life, that's not good for me. I know I'm not going to be feeling great after that. And yet that doesn't affect who I am. I am a child of God, and so are you. And he says, I want you to look at this, and our friends at True Face Ministries does this so well. They say, Jesus is beside you. His arm is around you. And together you're looking at sin, at the issues that, and he says, son or daughter, we got this. Mm-hmm. I got this. And so the church, big C and local church, little C, she is becoming. And we're hoping that as she becomes who Jesus is coming back for, that as a part of that, we get better as leaders in the church at helping identify our own humanity so that we can, with grace that we talk about, extend that to others, ourselves and to others, better and better and better, right?
Yeah, I absolutely love that answer. Thank you guys so much for your wisdom on that. Often the toxic leader is the one that gets the blame when they are exposed for whatever wrongdoing that happened. But often the conversation is never addressed towards all of those who stood by silently, the yes men, women that allowed for such a leader to get to the place that there are. Is there such a thing as a toxic follower?
It's a really complex question and super deep. And I'm going to fail at giving any sort of solid answer to it. So we'll start the dialogue and then continue seeing processing. But yes, yes, the answer is yes. Unfortunately, trauma begets trauma. Often if we have not worked through our own stories as young kids, we're drawn towards trauma systems and we all play a role in that trauma mm-hmm. system. So if you look at your family of origin system and you start to understand the role you played in that system, you're often playing that same role in the system that you're working or going to church
today.
And so you can see church systems will actually attract a certain kind of flock. And the more toxic a flock is, the more you're drawing toxic people around you. And so the toxic follower is someone that just doesn't have their own understanding of their voice. They don't know what they think. They don't know what they feel. They don't know what they want or what they need, because in their family of origin, that was unsafe and scary to do. Dominant narcissistic parent, abusive parent, whatever the system is. So they're drawn to come alongside and follow a leader that's just like that. Somebody that says, I don't have to think and feel for myself or discern my own walk with the Lord. You'll just tell me. And then you can see how those systems end up growing. And then they end up being really the bigger the wake. And then we see that leader, you know, fall at some point. The cost of leadership is so heavy. Jesus told us that. I mean, he's like, you don't want to be a leader. I mean, it's a big deal to be a leader. And so when you're hungry and trying to meet your need by being a leader, eventually you'll crack if you're not doing your work and everyone else around you was kind of a part of that system. Now, I'm not blaming everyone around. So it's similar to, I'm going to get really concrete in that a domestic violence home, a wife who stays married. And in this case, I'm going to use man and woman, and the man is physically battering her. It's not her fault that she was battering. Okay. Or that he was battering her. Okay. So that's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is there's a tolerance that we have when we're drawn to these systems. And the healthier we get, the lower our tolerance. The way we say, yeah, that's not healthy. We don't do that here. You know, those kinds of things.
There is understanding that trauma victims in general can be drawn in that way is really important, so that it's not, you know, my fault, your fault kind of a situation, yeah. But that's a reality that there's a vulnerability. I appreciate that you said that, Tara.
Yeah.
I will say that also, though, that there is a responsibility. Each of us has responsibility as to what we are aware of, and God knows that. And there are many situations in these stories that you could use as case studies, right?
Of people who knew
and also concealed and hid and tried to avoid. And they're just repeating the behaviors that they have had in their lifetime, right? If you didn't have, for example, you didn't have parents that modeled conflict well, right? They never showed you their conflicts. And you were launched into the world, and I don't have to guess, you were probably conflict avoidant. Mm-hmm. So if you get into now a system where you're, let's say, on the executive team, and you have a lead leader, the senior leader or the founding leader or what have you, that's unhealthy and abusive or whatever, and you are a conflict avoidant person, you're going to minimize what's going on. You're going to start looking at, well, what did I do? And is it my fault? And you're going to be, and there's some ownership that you need to take in that process, but it's also repeating some things that maybe you didn't have control over, yeah. Right? Understanding and compassion for. So the point is that as things come up in your journey where you are facing things, that there's a check, there's a body reaction. You know how to pay attention to what's going on in your body? It's telling a story. It's trying to get your attention. And God made us and designed our bodies to alert us to things, and then to respond. And how do we respond? Getting the help that we need. Like if I continue in that avoidant mentality, right? If I know that that's in my story and I'm good at avoiding conflict, and I also believe that that's not healthy, there's an integrity gap. Let's start working on that. Let's close that gap. So get some help. Start meeting with a professional that can help you deal and understand what does healthy conflict look like. And get some practice in the behind the scenes, and then take that to the streets little by little and get more comfortable expanding those muscles and that skill set so that you can give and help others actually in a healthy sense.
I think the key is, what do you do when you do know? So if I know you are an abusive leader, or I know you harmed a child, or there was a power issue going on, it's what do I do with that? Mm-hmm. That will be the issue of whether I'm culpable or not. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Versus just assumptions, or you feel unsafe to me, but I don't have any evidence yet. I think that's just hard. There are just master manipulators and wolves in sheep clothing. That's a different story than just kind of the general gaps that we all have in our humanity.
It almost seems like the same reason why someone keeps ending up in the same like dating relationship. Like, oh, I keep dating the same type of people. I don't know why. It's the same way how, based off of things in your past, how you see yourself, how you see other people, that can also be the reason why you end up in some of these situations. And you, the thing that I'm trying to say is not necessarily why am I here, but like, it's so interesting how I tolerate this type of behavior as opposed to like, oh, I know better, or someone should call this out.
Yeah. That's so spot on. So true. I was just was meeting with a young leader, a client, just the other day, and they had shared in their story a family growing up that they didn't have a voice. And they were among other siblings, and their voice just really wasn't heard. And it was the, in this case, the mom. She had the dominant voice in the family, and her needs were met by her kids. And her, and this client, who's an adult in his 30s, is just now looking at the impact that that's had, specifically connecting the dot to a leadership situation in his job. And he happens to be a worship pastor and has experience in, he's reviewing why he went into and gave so much power to one particular person in that organization here in his 30s.
That's, yeah.
And they had like godlike authority in their lives. Like, and he's just now making the connection that to the tendency that he had, because in his family of origin, in the home he grew up in, he didn't have a voice. And so he was looking for others to that would see him. And in this case, this leader saw him and was getting their own needs met by allowing him to be the subject, right, to his influence and authority in his life. And that leader liked it too much. And used this this client of mine in that way. And he's just now connecting that dot. It's powerful. We do this. And he's, you know, I'm not blaming my client. And I'm not fully blaming that leader, right?
That leader has trauma too.
That leader has has story and context as well. But you're right. The connection is significant.
I think that's the thing that I'm also, and I hope all of the listeners right now are getting that. That yes, there's everyone has an integrity gap. So we shouldn't villainize anybody, but we should acknowledge when there's been harm done, why there's harm being done, where did it come from for one to think that this is the way that they need to act. I think that's important. So thank you for just your wisdom on that and mentioning that as well. Because I think that's very easy when we get hurt to make the other person the villain. It was like, well, they're still a creation of God too. They've had some bad stuff happen in their life too. Unfortunately, you know, they are acting out in a way that has harmed you, and that is not right. But see them as someone that needs help. What do you do when you know? And there's so many people listening right now, even possibly, that know, oh, there's some stuff happening here that isn't cool. But they don't feel safe to confront it. Like we already said, there's one side of the conversation where it's like, I don't want to confess this to my congregation or to my people because I can lose my job. And there's somebody else that may say like, I don't want to bring this up to my employer because if I bring this up as an issue, I can lose my job or I can get kicked out the church. Crazier things have happened. Is there best practices when someone sees integrity issues in order to confront it? Or is it just like, you know what, maybe I should just softly leave? I don't know.
Great question. I kind of we'll broaden it with maybe not thinking so much of like abuse per se. Abuse, there's some very clear actions in place, but broader, like this just feels like toxic, slow and steady drip, and I can't put my finger on it. That's probably what most people relate to. But good practices is go slow and start with naming it with your God. Don't just ignore it, but spend some time in prayer and in journaling. Then two, ask the Lord, who do I go talk with? And I start small with two wise people. And then there's this process of doing it together. And there's wisdom and some practical steps of what might be next. And in all the different possible scenarios, it's why we have mandatory reporting, because it gets really messy in that I might not be able to know what to do, but if I hand it off to the you know, DHS or some of the other facility, the police, they might be able to help. And yet we've got all kinds of connotations with that, especially in the church. And we're really scared to do that. And we see how messy that gets, right? That's not healthy either. So it's constantly starting small. Lord, what do you acknowledge it, name it? Who are the people I need to talk to? And then work as a smaller team to go to the next right place. And then eventually you'll see God kind of taking step by step what needs to happen versus the overreacting, taking it to the public and just going wide and fast, or ignoring it, which is the other extreme. And then all of a sudden now it's a big scandal. So that would be my practical wisdom. It's not a concrete answer, but it's a good place to start, because I do trust that if you're starting in those two places, God's going to show you what's next for the specific situation that you're dealing with.
You know, one of the areas that's so difficult to be authentic nowadays is social media. And it seems like anybody that wants to be successful now has to have some type of brand online. What would you say are the perspectives and habits that all leadership should have in regards to their
social media? Well, I love this question, because it's I've only been on social media myself for a little over a year. And I avoided it for a long time because I didn't know my why. And so I think that's the first question. Know your why. It took me a while to discover why. And my why was because there's people on social media that I can't reach with our message of grace and of wholeness and practical helps that might appreciate a little tidbit, or knowing who we are that might then lead them to a book or something deeper. It took me a while to get there. And I didn't want my why to be because I needed to have a name out there, or I needed to show that what I was eating. Like, I think that's the part I was avoiding of we're more private in that we try to be, we're leaders, and anyone who's leading someone, you understand there's a time when you're serving and then there's a time when you just want to be Jeff and Tara. And so always thinking, is this a good picture? And I know my wiring, it could bleed into everything in my life. And for a while, my girls were like, Mom, is this a picture because you want a picture? Or is this for social media? And so having to always question the why, and I'm checking it out in my own heart, and then having really clear boundaries. So I have clear boundaries, a skeleton around social media that helps keep me in check. And so I'm not posting more than, and your skeleton would be your own skeleton. You got to figure that out. But for me, I'm not posting more than once a day. And if I have nothing that the Lord is giving me, then I'm not posting. I'm not just throwing something out there because of what the algorithms are needing. I'm trusting God to use it and meet. So if I get 2 likes or 500 likes, whatever it is, it's on God's. He gets to be the one in charge of how he's using that. And then I'm also being really thoughtful about, is this a true representation, or is this the performer part of me? And I'm really checking on that. And sometimes I have to sit with a post for a little while, and often they don't go out because I go, oops, I was trying to perform there. I was trying to give the audience what they wanted or needed. And I don't want anything to do with that. And so the pull of social media, the final thing is the addictive part of it. It is meant to addict us. And so I know all the neuroscience, Jeff and I know that. So I don't like to add to that in the community. So I'm trying to think, bring hope. And then I have to keep my own addiction in check and making sure I'm not going for my phone all the time. And so keeping some sort of a structure around that of how often I'm touching my devices for social media. Oftentimes, the more our social media grows, we have someone else doing it for us. So I would just constantly make sure that your why is in place, no matter who's doing it for you.
With the few moments you have left, tell our listeners how to get in contact with you, how to connect with your content that you currently have out.
Well, thanks for the invite on that. If you're interested in learning more, we've got kind of what I call kind of shallow pool. You can follow me at Tara Matson. You can follow our organization Living_Wholehearted. And we also got for moms and daughters something called My Courageous Girls, which we didn't talk about here, but you can follow there. Mm-hmm. You can also come to our podcast where every Tuesday we're offering things. So those are kind of, you know, dipping your toe in the water into checking us out. If you want a little bit more of a deep dive, you might pick up our book, Shrinking the Integrity Gap or Courageous. And you can definitely come to our website at Living Wholehearted to sign up for our newsletter. And we've got all kinds of resources from counseling, consulting. We work with leaders and we've got a whole team. We've also got our thing we're most excited about is our Wholehearted Leadership Cohort, which we talked about the most. And our applications are going to be opening again this summer.
So good. So good. I'm a subscriber to your podcast, by the way. Great, great content. Thank you guys for what you do. Jeff, Tara, this was truly an honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. So good to talk with you.
Thank you, Stephen.
And there you have it. My conversation with Jeff and Tara Matson. Jeff and Tara, thank you so much for taking time to answer such very deep and difficult questions. I truly appreciate all of the wisdom that was shared today. And I want to encourage all of you guys, be sure you check out their content for yourself. I'll put a link in the show notes of their podcast, their book, and all the other resources so you can help shrink your own integrity gap and be aware of how to have healthy boundaries all around you. Guys, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you will join me again on the next episode of the Humble and Honest Podcast. Yeah.